It's July 27th, 2017, and this is Radio Free Nintendo, episode 533, The Restarting. It's not going to be the name, I just felt like going ahead and saying that right off the gate. Speaking of restarting, John Lindemann.
James, I get the strange feeling that we've done this before.
I feel like this is the third time I've introed you tonight.
Definitely, I feel like it's the third time too, but, you know, regardless.
Even weirder, I feel like we've already recorded the podcast and everybody else is gone.
It kind of feels like that. I can't put my finger on it, but yeah.
I feel like this is where we need Guillaume to edit in some kind of, like, derisive chuckling from Greg that, like, well, these idiots can't even intro a podcast correctly.
This is true.
You know, maybe we can't. Maybe we can't intro a podcast correctly, but that's okay.
Yeah, but regardless, I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
Also joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And Mr. Gilbert.
Hi.
I was concerned that you had just left.
I'm struggling to find, an intro that's mine, but that's okay.
An intro that's yours?
Please bear with me for a while.
So you always try to pilfer the Simpsons characters one.
That's true.
What was the thing again? Wuzzle Wazzle?
Yeah.
Wuzzle Wazzle. There we go.
That's atrocious. Speaking of atrocious, if you gave up on the show last week, you missed the announcement of our next retroactive. It's Super Mario Sunshine! For the GameCube, which has never been re-released in any official capacity, so get your GameCube controllers out and get out your memory card. It's time to collect 20 blue coins all over again. You know,
you guys
are also on this show. You could talk,
too. I know. There's no way that's happening. I think we were going to let you collect all the blue coins while we were, wisely staying away and letting you do your thing.
Well, you're just trapped in pachinko for eternity. It's all good on Delfino Island unless you yourself are the pachinko balls. So, we'll be doing that sometime middle of August, roughly contemporary with the game's release in the U.S. We're not tying it to that. That just gives us time to play it. I'll probably stream some of it. Some of it will be off stream because I'll have swearing to do and won't be able to do that on camera. So, you look forward to that. There should be a talkback thread already on the Nintendo World Report forums. You can post your comments there. You can email them to the show. You can post them on, like, the NeoGAF thread or something, whatever. And we may use them on the show when we finally get around to having this conversation. But, just like everybody else, for its 15th anniversary and for the impending release of Super Mario Odyssey, and we're replaying this game to put that little bit of existential fear that maybe Nintendo still hasn't figured out open world 3D Mario camera controls.
Or maybe it's just gonna make Super Mario Odyssey all the sweeter. You know, it's the rose tinted glasses to make the upgrade seem less sharp than it really is. You don't know.
That's true. But if you've ever wanted to wear a jetpack powered with water that talks and watch a 15-minute Mario cutscene, well, Super Mario Sunshine is the only game in town. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Anyway.
That's new so business. Sad.
It's new. Yeah, I know. We've yet to see the return of Flood. The Poltergust has seen multiple returns, but Flood is a one-off.
Well, it's in Smash.
Is he? Oh, that's true. You can use him in Smash. I'm wrong.
I would have thought you would have more respect for it, sort of Gus Bellows-like property than.
The Bellows are sort of a beautiful device in that they go forever, effectively, and they create chaos that's not visible. Like you can see a wind gust, but it's pretty easy to miss in the general chaos. Flood. You have to charge up, and you have to kind of, and it's like visible and it's dodgeable. It's a little bit less just dickery. And that's what we're about here in Radio Free Nintendo. It's just dickery. And we're going to just go right in to new business. Guillaume, I'm asking you to start new business.
Right. So last weekend, I was going to visit a couple of friends who like playing video games. So I was told specifically bring the Switch because my friend has his was interested in getting one, and also his dad, who's like, you know, kind of a fan of any kind of gadget. And who had bought the DS when that came out, and who's into, you know, every product that Apple puts out, wanted to see the Switch. So I had to bring the Switch. I was kind of lacking a good multiplayer game to play, though, because I don't have Mario Kart 8. I refuse to purchase it again. Like, I might as well just bring the Wii U. And the unfortunate thing is that while I do have Jackbox Party Pack 3, there was no internet where we were going, so that was out of the question. So, kind of, I had heard good things about Death Squared, but I did not really believe them. I saw the trailer, it didn't really convince me, it looked frustrating, and I don't know. So, I still bought it, but it was a little bit like, okay, this is kind of a last resort kind of thing, and hopefully they're going to enjoy this. But I also had snipper clips, right? So there was always that to fall back on. So I got two extra Joy-Con, and so we're ready for four-player multiplayer Brother Switch. And Death Squared actually turned out to be this huge hit. Like, snipper clips, I don't think like they even got through the tutorial. They were like, this is dumb and boring. Let's just play as a bunch of boxes and explode instead. And one of the weirdest things is that for the first part of when people started playing, I was not even around. Like, I was otherwise busy. But, like, my couple of friends and the dad and the mom, who I don't think plays video games usually, apparently had gotten through four of the four-player levels by themselves. And just, you know, like, you could hear them laughing their ass off in the... you know, in the room. So it was, I don't know, like, I did not expect that kind of reaction. So Death Squared, it's this game where you can play it solo. I haven't done so, but I've read from, you know, the review on Nintendo World Report that it's a little bit, you know, you have to take control of at least two characters at the same time with both joysticks. So that's not exactly the ideal way to play. But otherwise, when you're playing co-op for the main campaign, you each control a box, and you're thrown into the kind of the story behind it is that you're playing as AIs that are being tested. And so you just have to survive and to solve the puzzles. And the levels always have some elements that are just, you know, unknowns. Like, you will die through no fault of your own just by experimenting initially. And that's kind of part of the fun. Like, the goal is always get, you know, on your the switch of your color. But by doing so, you might be making... you know, spikes sprout where the other player is standing. And so, like, okay, now that I know that, get off that part of the level, and then I step on the switch, and then you go to your switch. Of course, there are complications, like all of a sudden, you know, like you might have to find a way to not block off the path for the other player. There's also, you know, there's a variety of traps and of challenges that just that you have to get around, you know. Like, there might be laser beams that kind of follow you around, and the laser beam of your color doesn't hurt you, but it's going to hurt everyone else, you know. And sometimes, like, the beam might not actually be aimed at you. It might be following one of the other players, and so you have to stand between the beam and them. There might be laser tripwires that just trigger, like, instant death for everyone, or almost. And so, like, it's just, like, the shock. Like, these boxes, like, they explode good. And so it's kind of
I blew you up good.
Yeah, so it's kind of part of the shock and the kind of the... It's shocking in a funny way, you know? Like, someone dies and it's just like, oh, shit, I'm so sorry. But also, that was kind of amazing, you know? Or like, oh, you know, I just died and fuck you. But it's always like kind of, you know, like this initial discovery of, okay, what's going to happen now? Like, what are we supposed to do? What happens if I step here? Oh, whoops. Okay. Like this platform just disappeared and, you all died. And so like we start over. Like it's part of the, yeah, it's part of what makes it funny.
I take is very prompt about restarting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's immediate. And also there's kind of a total death counter in the corner, upper right corner at all times.
Nice.
And, it ticks up pretty fast. And of course, you know, like you finish a level, you get the results, and it shows you who's, you know, the number of deaths for each person, and it will tell you, you know, like acceptable or exceptional or, you know, see me after class or something. Except
most dishonorable.
Yeah, mostly just like it rates you based on how many times you died. Which is of course bullshit, because most of those times it's going to be through
by other people.
Yeah, usually it's going to be because of someone else messing up. So anyway, it's very fun. And so four players, it works surprisingly well. Everyone was into it, which is just not something that usually happens with four player games. Like usually there's always some one person at least who's just like, okay, I'm getting bored of this and wants to move on.
Statistically, it's just inevitable.
yeah. But in this case, like everyone was just eager to get playing again and to progress further in the game. And yeah, it was kind of amazing. And so like, I'm glad that I did not have Mario Kart, because we probably would have ended up, you know, playing that instead. Or I'm glad that Overcooked only came out today as we're recording this, because we certainly would have been playing that instead.
But you've already played that, right?
We knew that we all loved that game. So yeah, probably right. I wouldn't have discovered Death Squared. And so yeah, it's really, really cool. And so yeah, there are, you know, separate, there's at least, I think, 40 levels, maybe more, for up to four players. And there's a campaign with, you know, probably even more puzzles for one or two players. And so I started that with Karen. And in that case, in the main campaign, you've got also kind of a narrator, just like, you know, this bored dude in an office with an AI testing other AIs. And just there's kind of banter between the board guy and the AI who takes everything he says literally. And, you know, like if he says, ah, Jesus, they're at it again, like kill me now. And, you know, the AI will try to helpfully suggest the course of action. And, you know, like, no, please. And like the voice actor is actually really surprisingly good. Like, I don't know where to find him, but like he's genuinely funny and fun to listen to. So, yeah, all around, like, I'm very happy with this game, and it's definitely worth its, you know, its price. And, yeah, I hope that people give it a shot. Like, despite it, we're kind of now getting into the game release season, I feel, you know, like, Overcooked is finally coming out, and, you know, like, Splatoon is out, and so this has a chance of being overlooked, and that would be a shame.
There was a little bit of a lull that you probably could have squeezed the game into, besides ARMS. But yeah, now there's considerably less of a lull in place at this exact moment. So, as a non multiplayer experience, is this a multiplayer only kind of thing, really?
Yeah, I really have no idea what the single player experience is. You can play the co-op campaign by yourself, because really the only controls are the joystick. There's nothing else. So you can easily like play with both characters by yourself, but it's probably, you know, not quite the same. The other, like the face buttons just do like little weird things, like your box blinks or flashes a light or whatever. Like it's not
right.
I don't know. It's something to mess around with while you're waiting for someone to stop fucking falling off ledges. God damn it.
Does it make you mad, Guillaume?
It does. Hold your Joy-Con sideways correctly so that you don't just freaking
heathen.
Yeah, so that you just don't like, oh, I thought I was going right, you know? No, you were going forward, and
did you ever get annoyed at people holding the N64 controller wrong?
No, I didn't really play N64 all that much. So.
I kind of always imagine that. Of course, it's the one in the middle you hold, you idiot. God.
Well, I mean, like, if they're holding it wrong at GoldenEye, I'm not going to say anything. Let me get my headshot in.
You hold the side that has the D-pad on. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Oh, that middle one's optional. Don't worry about that. That one. That, who would hold the middle of a controller? Come on.
Very quickly, I had also borrowed Puyo Puyo Tetris from a friend, and we tried playing that very quickly. But then I realized that my friend had never played competitive Tetris, and so. That was just one-sided.
You should have had him play competitive Puyo then. He would have hated you forever.
Yeah, I got my headshot in that game. But yeah, I tried. Like, there's not enough. I feel like there's not enough granularity in the kind of the handicap options to you know, kind of offset that kind of skill
and experience differential.
Yeah, I mean, the reality situation is garbage collection can only be tuned down so much, and it's pretty aggressive.
Right, and all the handicap seems to do is that it speeds up the, you know, one screen, or it slows down another, like the falling pieces. So it's, I don't know, it's not really helpful.
I do think it may impact the garbage rate a little bit, but
maybe.
If one player is going faster and they're more skilled, that may actually be come out in the wash as still a net negative.
Yeah. Death Squared. Check it out. Don't pass it up.
John, you've been playing a game. I don't know if I've played this one, but a series that I've got some emotion for. What do you think?
Emotion.
I've been. No, I know.
That's right for the series.
You're a sensitive guy, James, and I think this is the game for you.
It's an emotional roller coaster.
It is more than you would think.
No, I know exactly how much of an emotional roller coaster this game is.
Yeah, the game is Ryden 5. It's on sale. You should get it if you don't have it for Xbox One. It's like $7.50. It's on sale this week, so it's super cheap. It's normally like $30, which I would never pay for.
I've looked at this, you know, but yeah, it did seem too expensive. But you know, I don't know whether it's on
Ryden. Ryden 5 is not your normal Ryden game.
It's something, particularly the story mode. You know, it has all your normal vertically scrolling shooter accoutrements. You know, you can choose between three different ships, and you can choose different. Guns for your ships and stuff like that. And you can kind of outfit it. There's a loadout screen where you can choose between, you know, different, you know, missiles, lasers, and whatnot. So it has all that kind of stuff. But really, the story mode is unique because there's a lot of banter back and forth. So what it is, there's two characters that are kind of with you the entire time. So you're playing along, and while you're playing along, there is constant banter between two characters, Ashiria and Max. Max is the captain, and Ashiria is like his subordinate.
Yeah, so I'm watching a video of it right now, and they just keep popping up in the top right screen, and text is coming up under them.
Yes, they literally talk all the way through. Like, they keep talking, and it's I would say the quality of their banter is probably about 1995 Symphony of the Night, kind of Metal Gear Solid sort of cheesiness.
So it's about 5 years more modern than the last Ryden game.
Probably. Yeah, the way the screen is set up is, you know, on the left-hand side you have a whole bunch of kind of stats and stuff to show you how you're doing. You have a shield, so it's what I kind of like about it is that it's not one hit, one kill. If you get hit, your shield is depleted, and when it gets down to zero, that's when you finally explode and you have to restart. And then on the right-hand side is where you have kind of the story element stuff, where you have a little video screen with these two characters talking. They don't actually talk. It's just still kind of – it's still animation. And then it has, like, text. And the text in the text window on the right also shows up at the very top of the screen, so you can quickly look up and see what they're saying. But the banter is very – very weird. The voice acting is extremely stiff, and so you'll be You'll be sitting there playing, and it's a lot of like military stuff, like, oh yeah, we have to go here and they're attacking here and this, that, and the other. But then every once in a while, you know, Max will say something like, let's switch topics. I really like South American coffee beans. And you're like, what? What are
bought.
You even?
This game just got bought, John.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought of you when I was playing it because it's the kind of stupid, stupid stuff that you would love.
So I'm listening to it too.
Yeah. And Max is obsessed with South American coffee beans. Bear in mind, this is like your typical military vertically scrolling shooter. You know, you're fighting all kinds of big bosses and all that kind of stuff. It's like very, like, you know, it's like Ikaruga or any of those kind of games.
So it sounds like the script writers went to the Sylvester Stallone school of character idiosyncrasies.
So there's like,
yes.
Right now, all I'm hearing is like, I would say mid to late 90s Gundam background combat music.
Yes,
just
total
looping,
butt rock. Mm-hmm.
Looping for about, I would say, 6 seconds.
Yep.
And then every so often, these two anime characters pop up in the corner. And this is all in Japanese, so it's not doing me much good. Mm-hmm. And they just... They're there for like 12 seconds. And then, John, what the fuck is this game?
It's very strange, yeah. And the girl, Ashiria, she will also say stuff like... At one point, you have to go. You have to go to some base... attack a base that's on a beach, and she says, oh, well, that's great. I haven't been to that beach. I can't wait to go. And he says something like, Max, the captain, says something to you. He gives her a stern, you know, dressing down. He's like, you know, you shouldn't say stuff like that. You have to keep your mind on the mission and stuff like that. It's so
great.
Cheesy.
It's so cheesy. Good.
You know, he's like,
I'm kind of into this.
Yeah, you should get it. It's super cheap. I mean, it's like 75% off right now. So definitely get it. It's pretty cool. It's a shooter. It's made by Moss, and they kind of churn these things out. They've made some shooters on smartphones. But I think they kind of viewed this game as their coup de grace, their ultimate achievement. They said this,
I mean, because,
you know,
Raiden, of course, is a real series. Like,
oh, absolutely.
This is a series with lineage and history. And this is polygonal, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Oh,
I wouldn't say it's great.
No, but it's not. It's not sprites, which is what I expect from a Raiden game.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's polygonal. It's a polygonal shooter.
And the combat's only on half the screen.
Yes. Yeah. So they kind of force it into like that Tate mode, right? By putting the combat, the actual, you know, gameplay on the middle third of the screen, and then the side thirds of the screen is just pretty much kind of filling space.
It's just garbage. It's like number. Yeah. It's like there's a chart here that's split into bars, so it looks like the Belgian flag.
Yeah,
there's stuff like stats that mean nothing.
Yeah, they track your stats across the stages. I don't even know what half that stuff is because I mean I'm trying to play the game. I'm not trying to track my stats in real time.
There's literal ass line graphs about what his performance is doing, and it dropped off a cliff for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, so you can imagine if the vitality sensor had come to fruition and
wired
it into something like this, you know, what could have been.
Yeah, but yeah, I would recommend it for you and Greg for sure.
The last Raiden game was 07. Like, it's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That was 4. And then
that
was really sort of a comeback because 3 was 05. And then before that, you had to go back to 94.
Yeah, I think Raiden 4, I think Raiden 4, I think it came out originally on Xbox 360.
It did.
And then I think it came out, they came out with Raiden 4 Overkill on PS3, I think.
Yeah, because it was an Xbox Live, I think it was a Summer of Arcade game.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and then, 360 had some weird, like... You know, sort of had a weird base with shooters for no real explicable reason.
Because somebody at Microsoft willing to make contracts really like shooters. That's the only explanation that makes sense.
Because we don't like other Microsoft consoles. It didn't really have any presence in Japan where those games have their base. But yeah, for some reason, there's a number of them that showed up on 360, at least initially.
Yeah, and actually, Raiden 4, that just came to backwards compatibility. So
there you go.
So yeah, but you, James, you should definitely, you of all people, should definitely get this game.
Oh, I'm in love with what I'm seeing. It looks so stupid and wonderful.
It is stupid and wonderful, I will say. So yeah, so that's Raiden 5. I mean, I wouldn't say it's Ikaruga, but it's a pretty cool game. I mean, if you can get it cheap, which of course it's on sale now, like I wouldn't pay $30 for it, not even close. But you know, I've been waiting for it for a while to be on sale, like deeply discounted like this. So as soon as I saw it was on sale, I picked it up because I generally like the Raiden games. It's cool.
Yeah, I actually played an original Raiden machine when I was in Japan.
Oh, cool.
Like the original. It's a Tecmo series. At mm-hmm. least originally it was. Well, I guess they published the arcade. Like, I don't know if they made the original game. Mm-hmm. But like those got ported to everything.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm 95% sure they didn't make it. Like Seibu.
I'll tell you what I would have loved to see if
Seibu
I was in Japan. Did you see the Darius cabinet with the multiple screens? I would love to see.
But
that.
I looked. Yeah, it was. I mean, it's so the original Raiden series is pretty primitive. It was ported to everything. I mean, literally ported to everything. Like you had all your home computers in Europe. You had like. I think even like the Lynx had a port. There was definitely a PC Engine version. I want to say there was an NES version, but I'm not 100% sure. I think there might have been a version for the FM Towns. Like everything got versions of this game.
The mark of quality right there in my
books.
Yeah.
Maybe it was for the Super Nintendo, not the NES. I don't know. It's really good though. It's a really cool series. I'm glad you mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm gonna buy this. I'm gonna buy this while the next person's talking.
Do it.
Done. All right. So, Greg, I guess I'm up also. So I guess I'll buy it after I'm done talking. Greg, I played a couple rounds of Splatoon with you yesterday.
Splatoon 2. I saw you on there. I jumped in, and then like after a couple, Nintendo
we all got
servers.
Disconnected.
Yeah, servers started going weird. Like there was gonna be maintenance, but that was not part of it. That was
no.
That.
We all got disconnected at the same time, and then I couldn't find you on Friends. In fact, if you went to Friends, it just hung forever.
Yeah, there was nothing. Yeah, if you was in the lobby, it was just the incline, just staring, you know, looking
into the
around
abyss.
Blankly,
yeah, it was great.
Yeah, trapped in the Black Lodge or whatever. Yeah, nothing.
Yes. So, first, a couple immediate thoughts. I got Splatoon 2 on Tuesday, so I haven't spent a ton of time with it. But immediate thoughts: I hate how much you're restricted at the start of the game in terms of weapons. Like I know this is a minor thing because you can get new weapons real fast, but like I really wasn't having fun until I got my arrow sprayer.
well, maybe you need to learn different weapons, James.
Well, no, that's the thing. There are weapons I like besides the arrow sprayer, but the first four that are available to you are not on that list.
Is that a geet that I heard? Geet?
No.
Good?
It was more of a get more like more diverse with your weapons. You know, this was the thing in Splatoon originally where you had to unlock stuff as you leveled up, which I get.
Yeah.
But like at the very beginning, what is it? You get the Splattershot Jr., which is just like the little like machine gun sprayer. It doesn't go very far. It sprays that a lot.
Sure.
It's kind of a jack of all trades weapon, but its superpower sucks real bad. And then you start to unlock stuff. It just happens that the arrow sprayer isn't till level 6. And like my entire experience changed once I got the arrow sprayer.
The thing is, like, I'm kind of a sucker, I guess, for the whole leveling up thing. And when I was done, like, what was it, like level 50? Once I reached level 50 in Splatoon 1, that's around the time that I stopped playing.
Nice.
So I could complain, like, oh yeah, like there's... Because it is, like, kind of a crappy weapon, and it took me a while before I got the one I wanted. But, like, every kind of... you know, you have to wait too long to play this to play what you want, or like you can't play the summon run when you want, like
ever in North America, because like oh no, it'll be on at 2 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Right.
Fuck you, I have to work.
Like in a way, I'm kind of hoping that it's gonna help me not get burnt out in the game as quickly.
You kind of pace yourself, yeah.
Yeah, because like we, you know, they plan to somewhat kind of support it for at least 2 years. It would be nice, I guess, if it could be a game that I could play for 2 years. I don't know if it's going to happen, but
yeah.
I kind of
got to a point with the original Splatoon where I like, was nowhere near level 50. It was probably
no, I never got to 50.
You know, where it's like, not consciously so much, but you kind of reach a point where I was kind of done with the game. But a lot of that had to do with what I talked about last week in terms of it, you know, having it on disc, it being on Wii U. You know, I am more optimistic that this is something I could keep dipping back into, especially with content updates over a longer period of time than I did with the original.
I did find out that if I put the Switch to sleep when I'm standing in the Black Abyss, waiting to join with the option to join a match, I don't have to watch the host tell me what the levels are.
Yeah,
I start
wonder,
it back up.
I wonder if that
survived
the first update, though. That's because is that still the case? Because just not long ago, as we record this, had the 1.12,
which fixed the infinite ticket glitch.
Yeah, and there was some balance adjustments, like about, you know, certain how many points you have to sort of accrue to activate specials and weapons and stuff. So it wasn't just that,
right?
But yeah,
that was the key feature.
Yeah, I assume that was really what kind of prompted it at this stage. But yeah, we'll it'll be interesting to see if that, because it is nice to circumvent when you can.
Yeah,
so I'll just check the stages on the little, you know, I'll press X and I'll look what they are.
Yeah, they're right there. I can see them.
What's funny is that like at some point in one of the previews or trailers, like they were bragging about the fact that you can skip most of Sheldon's spiel.
You can, you know, thank God.
But, yeah, but you can't skip that thing. Like the opening, every time that you start Splatoon, like you're going to have to go through Marina and What's-Her-Face just listing the levels, and it's not, you know, it's clever once, and then you're kind of sick of it.
I don't even think it's clever once. I actually don't enjoy their interactions nearly as much as I did in the first game. Like, I don't know. It's just, it feels a little bit too like, well, they were really popular. We need to do another set of these. Like they've done it once. Like, they could have done something different this time. I don't know. But regardless, it's just like, okay, just let me, I don't care. I don't care what the stages are in ranked mode. I can't even play ranked mode. Like, don't.
I know you gotta get level 10. You know,
just fuck off. I don't care. And so, like, I have to kind of hammer. So,
and then, the league mode's even farther off, isn't it? Because you've got to get up to B minus, or, you know, once you've able to access rank mode. So,
yeah,
it's really, really far away. It's telling you about that at first.
Yeah, wow. So it's like, so I actually went into the game and I had to watch it because I didn't save in the, quote, save in the abyss. And so I had to watch it. And then the game told me there was an update I needed to apply, so I applied it. Then I had to watch it again. Mm. It's like, no, I don't want to watch the stupid video. I don't care. And then, whatever, it's just, you sit there and you watch it, and then you can finally get back into playing.
There's a surprising number of things that you would think they would have thought of fixing in a sequel to Splatoon, and they did not.
This is number one. Which leads us to believe
that they don't think there's a problem.
Yeah, there's no problem. There's everyone loves the, no, stop, please. So I'll give some thoughts on it besides the fact that the arrow sprayer is life. legitimately, my average score has increased by almost 300 per round now that I have the arrow sprayer. The lethality has become significantly higher as well. So first thought is single player is very much more the same from the previous game. I'm just beat the boss of the third set right before we recorded, and so I'm now into the fourth of five. They're doing a better job of hiding the hidden items than they did in the first one, because I ended the first one with most of them. I had to go back and get a couple, but in this one, I've really only been getting, you know, maybe one out of three, one out of four of the pages. Much, much better work at hiding them. The world, the overworld you have to get around to get to the individual things is a little bit better. I thought that was kind of really, I really don't like that they hide the level openings. Like, I just kind of want to play the levels.
Yeah, what I would do with that is just find them all in one go. Yeah. Because as soon as you find it, you don't actually have to go in it to, like, yeah, because you could just walk to it through the melt menu as soon as you find it. So I was like, let's find them all at once so I'm not, like, later on, like, do one level and then it's like, oh, I'm going to have to forage around for a level to play one, you know.
Yeah.
That was the best sort of balance that I managed
even
to
if
strike.
You knew where they, even if they just told you where they were, you still had the platform to get to them. At least I know, like, oh, I'm going over here, and oh, all that was here was the, you know, the stupid.
No, because they're invisible. That's the whole point. You have to paint them to make them visible. Obviously, there's areas that look suspicious, and you're thinking, you know, yeah. But there was the odd case where I got somewhere, and it's like, oh, there's nothing here, and then you feel like such an idiot.
Oh yeah,
like,
that's the worst.
There's nothing there. It's invisible.
Yeah, like, if either they told you where they were, it just made them, like, tricky to get to, that would have been fine. Because at least then I know if I'm going there, I'm doing the right thing. Versus, like, there may be one up here. In the third stage, there's a platform floating in the middle of it that's exactly the right size to have one of those things on it. And to get to it, you have to jump off one of the ink lines, like, in the middle of flight.
Yeah, the rails, yeah.
And there's nothing there. At all.
It may have something to do with the balloon, like, you know, because there's, like, the balloon challenges where, like, you shoot a balloon. It's a bit like those certain cats in Scram Kitty where, you know, you sort of, you get it and then it moves somewhere else and then you get that and then it moves somewhere else and it's all on a timer.
Yeah.
But with shooting balloons and, yeah, sometimes you need to get to kind of particular spots to be able to shoot it. So yeah, that's the thing. It seems like it's without the context for that, you're just guessing what that's about.
And you know, I'm being a little bit pedantic with the stuff, like, oh god, they can do this better, they can do this better, they can do this better. But I mean, the reality of the situation is this is Splatoon. This is Splatoon TWO and also TOO. Like, so the experience of this game is very, very similar to the last game. There's just different stuff in it. Some of the weapons have been deprioritized. It feels like the game really matters more for team play now. You can even see that in some of the power-ups. Like,
the specials is where it's changed the most, isn't it? You
know, yeah, like there's a lot more weapons. Like team effect specials.
I feel like there's a couple of you call different. Even though I haven't experimented too much with specials, because I mean the single play is cool. I talked about this last week, and yeah, I've done the camp. I finished the campaign today. But you know the single play is cool in terms of how much it gets you to experiment with weapons,
right?
You know, because you get the Sheldon will ask you to use a specific.
I would never use the bucket otherwise.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I played the original game for several hours, and there's weapons that I was really using for the first time for any real extended period of time in the single player mode here. And then you can also come back and use a different weapon to kind of clear it. And like you said, you might at the same time be finding something that that was pretty well hidden. That you didn't get the first time stuff. So, yeah, I think that element of it, because it kind of, the level design sometimes was quite clearly built around, you know, using a charger, you know, the dynamics of that, you know, it's kind of moving through the ink and maintaining your charge and then just popping up and taking an enemy out and all that. So I felt like it helped bring a bit more variety to the level design, but at the same time, you can also come back and play the levels with different weapons anyway. So it's got more replayability, but all that being said, it's still fundamentally very similar.
Right.
So yeah, definitely, has been sort of there have been improvements, but yeah, this is truly a
sequel.
It's not a huge, kind of iterative sequel. It's not like a big, you know, like NES era sequel where it's like, let's make it a different genre. But with the specials, like I say, I haven't sort of experimented with them as much because you do get to use them a bit in the campaign, but, you know, it's very different sort of situation.
And they're scripted for like in this situation.
Yeah,
it's
a different dynamic. But broadly, I feel like you've got a couple of big differences in terms of you've got the ones where it's good for getting an opponent off a particular spot.
Right,
of
like
territory.
The Optimus Wolves, where it's just, yeah, like if they don't move, they die.
Yeah, and then there's ones that's more good for like making incursions into enemy territory, which might be like the hamster ball thing, for instance. So yeah, that's the biggest difference, because for me, that's rank mode, for instance, that could be a lot more important, that distinction. You know,
right.
Like if you're talking about splat zones, sometimes it is absolutely critical to get them out of there, otherwise you are going to lose in the next X number of seconds. Right. So that kind of power-up is really useful. On the other hand, something that might kill a bunch of people, you know, could be useful because then, you know, it might give your teammates, you know, some more room to operate to take the zone. But it might not, you know, so there's a sort of, it does feel like the specials, oh, this was always somewhat true, you know, they're not that different from some of the, you know, you've got In Karma now rather than like the bubble shields from the first game and things like that, you know, there's similarities with some of them, but it feels like the situational kind of value of them is more important in this one to the extent that I've played ranked battles so far.
Yeah, one of the things that I observed is that you know, like there was the one that lets you turn into like the super powered squid that just shot through the stage and just created chaos. In the first game, I can't remember what it was called.
The Kraken.
That's gone. Thing is gone, and that really, like, okay, that was one of the things where if you ran into somebody with the Kraken, you were just kind of screwed. Like there's nothing like that anymore. Like there's definitely times where sometimes it feels like, well, I was just gonna die. But at least now it's like, you know, things have a charge up time. You have a chance. Like I played around yesterday where I went on a bit of a rampage through the opponents and got three of them, and two of them I got them right before they fired off Tenta missiles. So like I stopped their special in the works, and then was able to come around, and now I've cost them their charge and knocked them off the stage, and it felt like my whole team got to move up now. I mean, and the power up I got for that is the one where you can shoot off the curling bombs just in rapid succession. Yeah. And so by firing those off, and actually you can swim and pop up and use them some more, I was able to make an express lane all the way down to their base.
Yeah, that's like I said, that's the kind of thing that, I mean, it can be used to help you take territory as well, but it's great for incursions, that kind of thing, where you just, like you said, the road building component of it is a big thing.
And it doesn't help you a whole lot, because right now with that thing, you could just stand in place and just turn like a clock and just fire them off and just inflate your score like crazy. But for the people behind you who see that you've just drawn this line directly to their base, like, and that was what happened. Like they just flooded in behind me and we just knocked them all the way back to the base. And that match turned into a bloodbath. Like it was, I think we ended up with like 80%. Like something really atrocious like that. It does feel like you can turn matches faster too now, because it's really easy sometimes to pin people into their base, but it's also really easy to, you know, flip that and push them off. Like once you break, I've had matches where like they were basically hiding right in front of our base. So once we left the safety of the shield, like almost immediately you got hit. And it does feel like there should probably be a cooldown window where you're invincible, like a hit stun. But like once we broke that, the whole match reopened and we were able to just kind of
run that. There's a risk to that kind of strategy from the point of view that, you know, if they're really going to try and sort of camp out there and, you know, up that far up the field, as it were, if they get taken out and then, you know, or, you know, at least you penetrate and get out of there, and then, you know, some are dead and some are stuck up there, you've got free range to just go wild then for the entire level.
Yeah, it's a weird, like the biggest change in this game, and we've shit on this pretty extensively. The biggest change of this game is the role of the app, which I got to use. So I didn't get to use when I played with Greg because we didn't find each other in the app approved way of doing so.
No, I mean, I wasn't looking for range in a game, and that's the thing with the way this is portable now. A lot of the time for me, that's what it's just going to be. Oh, I'll play around. Oh, there's a friend on. Oh, I'll join in. It's not going to be like, yeah, let's, you know,
coordinate.
It's like you hop online like and see who's out there, kind of thing, right?
So to talk to Greg, we would have had to have joined a lobby. And for us to have joined a lobby, one of us would have had to have left the game we were in, gone into Splatoon, created a lobby, and then we could have used our phones. We couldn't just say, oh, they're both in the same game. Maybe they want to talk. Because yeah. I had many things to say about Greg's beret at that moment in time.
James, you were wearing a bucket hat at the time. There's something about stones and glass houses
here's the difference. The bucket hat was all they would let me buy at that point.
Like, well, to be fair, that beret was the first thing that came up that had the three kind of additional apart. That was like the most... the best bit of gear I could buy at the time. And it also, this primary thing is the kind of like the thing that gives you a buff for speed at the start.
Right.
First 30 seconds of the match with opening gambit, which it can be useful with the rank matches. Because sometimes, yes, they can be really long, like wars of attrition, but other times you can win it at the beginning and being able to just get to the Rainmaker first or, you know, get to the tower first, whatever mode it might be, can play a factor in that. So it's a pretty useful bit of kit despite its aesthetic qualities. And I would think you'd have more respect for the Troutman look myself, fan that I know you are.
It was a mess. Like when you at level 4, the game is just so restrictive, and so actually getting good stuff now. Like I have rid myself of Pale's bucket hat and have moved on to greener pastures. I think right now it's a trucker hat, but like I'm still only on the two skill ones, and I've still only got stuff that's like, okay, I was using the splat dualies, which just burn through ink like crazy. So everything I had was geared towards conserving ink, or reclaiming ink. And it was just like, okay, I've just got to get ink all the time. I'm in trouble. But now that I've got the air sprayer, like there's more ink, it lasts longer. I can recharge it, and I can start prioritizing other things. But I did get to play with the voice chat, although we ended up not using it and instead using Skype because I was on a stream with Seren on Tuesday. Which I don't know, the less said about how that went down, the better. But, you know, all the shit that John and I used to joke about doing to each other in Smash Brothers for Wii U, you know, like the, wait, James, did you set this to a 90-minute coin battle? I sure did. Like, all that bullshit you could do in this game to almost like levels of customization that didn't need to exist. Like you don't need, and there's really no reason why Nintendo should have allowed the person controlling the lobby to set themselves a spectator, one person on a team on their own and four people on the other team. Like it should have just said, no, you can't do that. That's not okay. Cause if you ever played a game where like one of your players times out and it's just 3-on-4 and you know how bad that is. Imagine 1-on-4. It's miserable.
So is there any option for like bots or anything?
No. And so basically if you're stuck in that situation, your only act is to protest by refusing to press A in the menu when it's ready and making everybody wait for 90 seconds? And then just sitting behind your shield until the game ends. Like really all you can do is stage a sit-in. But yeah, bots would have been useful or something to kind of fill in the gaps when you're down a couple people.
Yeah, no bosses. That sucks.
Yeah. We had some good matches, though. We experimented with a couple of different play styles. Don introduced his hide-and-seek version of the game where one player has to wait for a minute while the others hide. Don't touch the Rainmaker is apparently against the rules, so I violated that rule pretty frequently. Don't use the... The fun part was, like, you were allowed to pop your powers if you were hiding. So, you know, people were firing attentive missiles at him as he was waiting for his turn, as he's waiting for the countdown. don't use the ink shield because it highlights all your team members. I learned that one because we were hiding from him, and I popped it, and he saw the person that was hiding nearby. So that didn't go so good. But... like there is a lot of playability in the friends mode, and yeah, the voice chat worked. Like people would come in and we'd say like, "Hey, we're not using voice chat because we're also using Skype." But like I could hear them, they could hear me. But holy crap, did it kill the battery on my phone? Like knocked it down to basically 30% in a couple hours, doing not a whole hell of a lot. But yeah, like it feels such a barren implementation. Like God, why? I know we said this last time, but like this could work better, and I have to assume it will. But I want it now. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. But that's what I mean, that's
good talk.
Kind of, well, that's kind of Splatoon 2 to me. I mean, there's a lot of stuff where you would have thought things would have been improved or would have been better, and they just didn't do that.
I think the weirdest one so far is the Salmon Run stuff in terms of the schedule for that.
I've never caught Salmon
Run. Because that is quite one of the most major additions to the game. It's a different, not only is it a new mode, it's a different kind of mode. Mm-hmm. You know, but it just the limited availability of that seems like I'm just struggling to see the rationale underpinning it, because it's one of these things where, I mean, I had a chance about a week ago now, on Friday, to play some Salmon Run with a friend while it was up, where it was two of us in the same room online together, and then two random people filling out the team, so you've got some coordination there, and to me that seems like the best way to play that mode. Ideally, be with more people, either in the same room or connected through a chat app or whatever. But obviously when you're talking about that sort of stuff, it's going to require people's schedules to line up, and the idea of like, oh well, our schedules line up, but Salmon Run's not playable at that time.
Seems
like such a silly thing. I'm just struggling to see. I've not read anything that really explains it. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, no, not that I've seen. And it's a real bummer to go like. So basically, Saran and I were in there, and she said, "Okay, go do the Salmon Run tutorial while I'm playing ARMS on the stream, and then I'll hop in with you." And then I'm like, "The gate's closed. Is that bad?" And so I'm in the chat, goes, "Oh yeah, it's down till 2 a.m. on Thursday." And then it's open till 2 p.m. I'm like, well, that doesn't help me at all. So I can't even do the tutorial. So when Salmon Run is back, I can do Salmon Run.
I mean, do you think maybe that's just because they're testing the mode? You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe they're just observing
it's Horde mode. It's Horde mode, so maybe, yeah. But like...
Also, someone on Twitter was saying that, kind of making excuses for it, but the rewards for doing Salmon mode are pretty significant, apparently. So maybe it's kind of a way to not have people be overpowered too quickly.
Yeah, my response to that would be
limit the number of times you can run it. Like, just
would be tone down the rewards. I mean, ultimately, game is its own damn reward, and we paid for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Playing the mode is more important to me than getting gear or whatever. I would imagine, like I said, that scenario I talked about trying to get converging schedules and all that kind of stuff, it would be small comfort. Say, oh well, otherwise we'd be overpowered, when you can't make something like that work. It just, I feel like that's not a good enough reason if that is indeed any contribution to the situation.
Right.
Yeah, like, it just, if it really is the reward, just say, I mean, even if it's, they want to have the rewards high, just limit the reward. Say, okay, you've already earned your reward today.
Like, the rest of the time, if you play, you're playing for fun, God forbid.
Yeah, and then you don't run the risk of, okay, well, people have already got their rewards, they can't. My thought was maybe they're just trying to say, like, okay, that way people will all be playing at the same time, kind of the same thing with the Splatfest.
I can understand limited during Splatfest or something. It's like, okay, there's this event thing going on right now, so like funnel everyone towards that. But it's a lot more patchy than just that.
Yeah, like it's, so I'm looking when the next one is right now. But for the moment, I can't.
If I remember correctly, for our time, it was 1 a.m. on Saturday morning, so it's a Friday night for you guys.
Okay, so I'll actually be able to play that one, unless, maybe I have fucking plans.
And then I think it's pretty much like a 24-hour block then, Friday night, Saturday night.
Okay, so maybe I'll catch that. Like that's frustrating to not know. Like, okay, so I have to schedule my time when I want to play this game so I can get into this mode.
Well, especially because it's the, you know, the obviously all the, you know, the team-based stuff and all that, but this, you know, so kind of co-op, and, you know, the coordination, I feel like, is really important. I mean, just from the amount that I played, it can kind of very rapidly go from seeming like everything's in hand to everything is very much not in hand. Yeah, everything's just gone wrong. You know, and a lot of the time that can boil down to the fact that you get these different boss salmonids that tend to have vulnerabilities to like a particular weapon, but the way the weapons is got allocated to you per wave. So, you know, somebody will have a charger, somebody will have a bucket, somebody will have a splash shot, right? You know, that kind of thing. And so, of course, that's the thing. You know, the coordination element really is like, yeah, you know, this boss is over. Whoever's got the charge, you need to get your art, you know, don't deal with some like small fry over there. You need to get your ass and kill this thing right now, because otherwise we're not going to meet the quota, or it's going to overrun us and we're all just going to die, you know. So like it's a lot more fun and just a lot more doable, it would seem to me, with the maximum coordination possible, and you know, blacking out big parts of the schedule does not help with that.
No, I did. One thing I did find, and I meant to mention this a minute ago when we talked about the app, is the ability to order stuff and pick it up. Like, the gear you can get is way better. But, like, it's constantly changing, so you have to just keep checking it.
Oh, I see. It's one of those things. That's what it's there for, is to make you keep interfacing with it.
So I bought, like, just now as we were talking, you can only have one open order at a time. But I, even though I can only buy right now, naturally, gear that has one extra slot, I was able to buy a new hat and a new shirt that have three slots or two slots.
Hmm.
So, like, all my gear now is way better than it was before.
But is it like you get to choose stuff that you've, that people you've played with had, or what?
No, these are items that may only show, at least it seems like they only show up if you can order them from the app. Like, they're specialty items.
Oh.
And and so they look pretty, some of them look pretty interesting. They have good stats attached to them. And the idea is just that, like, oh, we'll just check the app every couple hours because something rotates out every 2 hours, and maybe you'll find the item that you need to make your character dreams come true. but they're expensive too. Like, the hat I just bought was $11,000, which is quite pricey, but having it is, it's a plus. I don't know, like, this goes back to kind of what we said they could do with an app, but we assumed, and I guess because we're crazy, that all the other stuff about an app would be fine, and that these would be the kind of features to make the app, oh, okay, actually, you know what, this app thing's not such a bad idea. But that's not reality. Anyway, all right, so anybody have any more Splatoon thoughts before we wrap it up?
I will say, campaign-wise, having finished it, although I haven't got everything yet, I will be coming back to the levels, I think, here and there. You know, I enjoyed it. I felt like the level design was a bit more varied. They had some more kind of stage features, you know, than they did before. And like you said, I think they did a good job of concealing the stuff. The bosses were fun, but I did feel like there was a bit it was too dominated by, you know, just fighting something in the big circle and doing it three times. You know, like, well, I think people remember very fondly the final boss of the original Splatoon campaign, because it had more of a dynamic feel. You know, the sort of the circular arena is the sort of 3D version of being in a Mega Man boss room. You know, and it does sort of feel very kind of just standard, you know, like, but whereas, you know, if it might be mostly cosmetic in a way, but if you kind of give the feeling of like you're chasing something, or, you know, like, just make it feel more dynamic and kind of just a different kind of scenario, I always find that helps. That's something that Treasure's usually very good with their bosses, is not just the design of them, but the sort of scenarios and the feeling of making it like a set piece rather than just another boss in another room. They design wise, I didn't, you know, have too much trouble, you know, quibbles with them. I just feel like, you know, they were a bit samey, and they could have given them a bit more kind of polish to kind of make them seem more special. But, you know, ultimately, you know, the single player is not, you know, where this game lives, so I'm not terribly surprised.
Right, it exists to fly out a bullet point. But yeah, I did notice the first three were all kind of that. And one, like, one was really creative and neat. One was just a boss. He jumps around the stage and has an AoE attack. And it's like, well, that's not very exciting, but, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing up single player, getting in some more matches, and trying out some stuff. Guillaume, you have anything you wanted to conclude with?
Yeah, I got it this week, so it's not, you know, like, I haven't spent enough time with it, really. I'm just, I'm hoping that my plan to not really get a controller pro will not, you know, mean that I'm forever doomed to struggle more than other people.
I've played it a lot so far, and almost all of that's been put handheld mode. I'm dealing with it fine. But then, you know, I played so much Zelda, in that mode, which obviously you did not, because you played it on Wii U.
But, right, I'm just not used to that configuration, so I find that the right stick is very low and kind of tough to keep my thumb on, and still, you know, hold the Switch. So I'll have to kind of figure that out. Maybe as I play more games on the Switch in handheld mode, I'm going to get used to it. But I find that the controller grip is quite essential.
Well, I mean, obviously Zelda's a very different kind of game, but I think it did just, you know, get me out. 150 plus hours of that got me acclimated to holding the damn thing, if nothing else. So it's, yeah, it probably might be more of an adjustment for you, but I think it'd be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to, you know, not be left behind too much, I did order an Ethernet
adapter.
USB Ethernet adapter. Yeah. And hopefully, like, the absence of any lag at all will give me an edge.
All right.
You are geek good now. Man.
All right, yeah. Is that his esports handle now? Yeah. Geek Good?
Geek Good. That's a terrible name.
They're all terrible, sure. Guillaume. I mean, all of the esports handles are terrible.
I guess it would be Geek Sports.
No. I think Geek Good is it.
No. Sure.
Oh. It's Geek Good, sponsored by Monster Energy Drinks.
Yep.
Team Monster. All right, well, that's going to do it. We're going to go work out some branding deals for Geek Good here. And when we come back, we'll go ahead and read your listener mail. Stay tuned. We're back. And it is time for listener mail. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we may just read them on the show. And if you're really lucky, we may actually answer them. I don't hold us to that standard regularly, but we're going to give it a shot. Guillaume, would you please read the first email?
Sure. Marcos writes, "Hi. So Nintendo has two upcoming remakes on 3DS, Metroid 2 and Superstar Saga, and they probably will do more in the future. So this is my question. What is the remake you would like to see the most next? And why? And for Switch or 3DS? Thanks for the awesome show."
John, I'm going to let you go first, because I know your answer.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, go on.
What, are you thinking F-Zero?
No.
I don't know. You know, James, of course. Oh, God, you see, that's the thing. It's like every time you try to tee me up like this, I always feel like I'm going to give you the wrong answer and just disappoint you. Because
John,
I never know.
John,
know.
You could never not disappoint me. It's fine.
I know exactly what you mean. Like, sometimes I feel like Greg is trying to set me up for a punchline. I'm just like, I didn't study for this.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The esoteric nature of most of my things is mostly for my own amusement, I'll be honest. I'm not proud of it.
I'm going to give you the opportunity to give us a real answer, John.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see maybe something like Blast Corps or something like that. That'd be kind of cool. I mean, it would never happen, but...
Right. So let's... I want to talk about something real fast. Like, the era Nintendo's games they're remaking. So they've sort of started to shift a little bit older. Lately, because originally 3DS era, they were doing a bunch of N64 remakes, specifically Zelda.
Yeah,
And I mean, really, it's, I mean, my mind first jumps to the N64 stuff because that's the most obvious stuff that would really.
That's the broken generation.
Yeah, it would benefit the most
from being remade.
The janky stuff that's in there from being pioneering 3D games a lot of the time.
Like I've always wanted to see another Wave Race game. Like that'd be really cool on Switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you could argue Wave Race got remade once already.
Yeah, because pretty... so many of the track themes were very similar and stuff. You know, mm-hmm. I know what you mean. You do get some.
But even then, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I'd like to see, this is kind of getting into sequel territory, but I'd love to see another Time Splitters game. That would be awesome.
So Free Radical is dead, right?
Yeah.
They got bought out by somebody. Yeah,
Crytek?
Yeah, Crytek at one point. London or something, right?
Yeah, but I'm not sure of their existence today.
Didn't they make Haze and then just kind of fade off into the...
That's it, they made Haze and Haze killed them.
Yeah.
It sure did, because Haze was like one of my go-to punchlines for a while.
Yeah.
Because the even the box art looked shitty. It was just a dude with a broken mask.
Mm-hmm.
Crytek UK, and then they got shut.
Which may, I guess, may only leave kind of remakes as the kind of only viable option for Time Splitters coming back. I don't know.
Yeah,
right. The people who made that series great are gone, so can it really only just make what they made prettier?
Well, the issue is that who owns that franchise? If you remember, Time Splitters 1 and 2 were Eidos games, but EA put out Future Perfect. So Eidos doesn't exist anymore as such. You know, they're now part of the Square Enix empire. Free Radical, I would assume the corpse is still owned by Crytek. Crytek itself is in, we'll say, less than beautiful situations. That's one of those, like, who the hell owns anything? What is this world?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Crytek owns it still. I'm not reading anything that indicates otherwise. They just didn't do anything with it. It said that they were unclear whether the company had even been shut down entirely, but they just basically, it's a non-entity.
But, John, you were heading an interesting way with the whole idea of jank on the N64, and there's still quite a bit of jank to be found in the NES days. And, you know, like, you look at a remake of Metroid 2, like, that's kind of an obvious...
Oh, because that game is jank.
Yeah, it's not very good, but it's part of this beloved series, and it's an entry that not a whole lot of people played, I guess, comparatively to, like, the NES game or Metroid Prime.
Because it was fairly early Game Boy. It was pre-Pokemon Revival. And it doesn't really handle the system it's on very well.
Right. So I tried to think of a similar entry like that in Zelda, and immediately, like, Adventure of Link comes to mind. Like,
yeah.
That has so many little things that they could fix, and it sure could be prettied up and put, like, on the 3DS or the Switch.
Yeah, I there's two ones. Zelda's always an obvious candidate because there's been so many remakes already.
And
we keep talking about the fact that, you know, there's gonna be Zelda product coming that isn't, you know, like a ginormous game that takes, you know, several years to develop. So remakes are a natural thing to look. I think Adventure Link is kind of, very much in the Metroid 2 kind of mold of something that people feel like could really use it, you know, like, so just, you know, some of the systems, you know, that might be too punitive, or, you know, kind of certain things could use with rough edges gets moved out and all that sort of stuff. And but like Metroid 2, we did a retroactive on that very, very long ago. For me, the sort of exception to the jank principle with Zelda, I've always said I want Link's Awakening remade, not because you can't enjoy it now, because you can. When I played through it on 3DS Virtual Console, but I still think it would benefit from a remake, and, you know, bring it to people maybe who otherwise wouldn't go back to it, and it's just so good the thought of making it even better with, you could have, much more sort of lush instrumentation of the great music. You could have, better options for the controls in terms of having more items available to you and swapping them out and all that kind of stuff. It would just make what is a great game more accessible.
Yeah, just think of all the memes that you could add in it. Like, just so many.
That's very much not what I had in mind. Oh, dear. That's the other side of the spectrum, where you're talking about something that was already really good. It's not like it, like, quote-unquote, needs a remake, but I think it would still benefit from one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of stepping away from Nintendo a little bit here. I went way deep dark down the Capcom, specifically Mega Man like path the other evening. Sort of like counting the number of Mega Man games that were released in that mid 2000s GBA rush.
You're and obsessed with Mega Man. I swear to God.
Fucking fascinating.
I was sitting at home cutting myself one night, and I was thinking about Mega Man, and I'm like, okay, sure, sounds legit.
You know, maybe we should just leave John out of the show, because there were, and I am not kidding. I think there were 10 Mega Man Battle Network games released in like a 5-year span or like a 7-year span. Fuck, something, some absurd number like that. And a lot of them are just versions, but they released 5 or 6 total, and like some of them had 3 versions. It was just absurd bullshit. But like I would really like to see an actual not 3D model, an actual sprite based remake of like the Mega Man Zero games. With graphics that are not, resolutions for the Game Boy Advance. That game would cost a tremendous amount of money in art assets. I understand that. But like we haven't had a bunch of games that go full HD without relying on like polygonal models and stuff. And I just would really like to see something that has that sort of hand-drawn look and plays in that style with that speed today on my TV. Because it's been a long time since we've had something like that. I think even on the PlayStation 2, all the Mega Man games, I think they were all sprite based. So like seeing like high def Capcom when they fucking care art in that series would be really, really captivating. And I think that's that sub series in particular, I think has the most visual flair built into it. Its DNA and its speed and energy and
The biggest thing I would think we could benefit from that, for having played some of the games a bit, is the viewing area, because I feel like that was probably, as much as anything, kind of put a bit of a cap on the balance in speed of the game, because you couldn't really, it was difficult to see, what was coming next. I feel like if you could open up that and rebalance it and maybe make it even faster. In some ways it could make it easier, but then you could also kind of rebalance it to keep it really hard and make it crazier kind of thing. I feel like that's the biggest problem with GBA. Yeah, GBA was obviously like kind of a first kind of renaissance for 2D games in a way, because... Right. Even though like 2D games were not that kind of gone and forgotten in the early 2000s, like Super Nintendo wasn't that long ago then, but still, there was some feel of like, okay, 3D games are just the sort of successor, and 2D games are kind of going into obsolescence. But then when you had a portable that could get close to Super Nintendo, you got these kind of revivals in a number of series and things. But, while the GBA was pretty capable in a lot of ways, still the resolution was really low. And, that meant that if you were going to have a certain amount of detail in character designs and stuff, it was still a little bit, obviously not as bad, but it was a little bit of that Metroid 2 problem. Mm-hmm. And so there are probably a number of GBA games that were
themselves remakes or ports of Super Nintendo games and such, but some of the original ones could really, you know, benefit from being brought to less restricted hardware. I'm thinking of something like Astro Boy, because that's got so, I mean, it's a treasure game, so obviously it's got slowdown, but there's some
I just put it in there.
Yeah, there's some hellacious slowdown at times that you know, could benefit from being fixed.
But it also has detailed, like really detailed work that would look great if it was actually redrawn.
Yeah, it would. It's sort of simultaneously like tantalizing but problematic because it's like you said, it's like, yeah, it would be a wonderful thing to see that brought to life on a bigger scale, you know, different resolution and everything. But then, as you said, it's like the difficulty of doing that just makes it seem kind of unlikely that it would get done. But also, I'd like to see him do Ninja Cop, Ninja 5-0.
Oh, yeah.
Just so it could be available for not a King's Ransom. that would be nice.
Yeah, like there's a bunch of games from that era in particular, and you know I mentioned the other series that the Battle Network games they were kind of making in parallel at that time, like those games are really fun, and they sort of laid out the prototype for what all those level five kind of like young boy saves the world in his small town games ended up being, like they all kind of structured. They all basically stole their structure from those games. But like all the icons in that game are really tiny because they only had so much to work with. And you had to have like 7 icons on screen plus the battle map plus all the characters. And it's like, damn, seeing shit on the screen is actually kind of hard. So playing those on the Wii U, because they all came out, all 6 of them came out on the Wii U for some reason. It's life-changing, but seeing them actually drawn to be on that size would be pretty cool. And they're good games, there's a weird like era of GBA games that just kind of got missed because, you know, the GBA had that short lifespan, the DS was out, and some of its really good games came out after the DS had hit its stride.
Yeah, I'm speaking of virtual console selections, I'm really disappointed that the Final Fantasy remakes didn't come along, because that would have been a good way to play 5 if that had been on the GBA virtual console. Yeah. Because that was actually a localized version of 5 that was not localized originally from the 3 Super Nintendo games, and then apparently there's a mobile version that's bad. It would be preferable to that.
The only other game that I can really think of that I'd like to see, you know, get another crack at it, you kind of have to roll back to sort of their GameCube era. Like, so I played Battalion Wars. I talked about it on the show. I think it's a game of marginal quality. But there's some ideas that are kind of neat there that would probably work well in sort of a more modern era. And I'd like to see them kind of take a shot at that again. Unfortunately, if we're talking remake, that probably means just make those same mistakes over again.
Yeah, it's kind of more, bigger scope than just a remake. I mean, a couple of ones I'd like, specifically to talk about what platform, I think a couple of ones I'd like to see happen before 3DS goes away, and certainly before at least Nintendo completely kind of sidesteps using the 3D feature of it, is first of all, yes, we're getting Star Fox on the Super Nintendo Mini, which it's nice to see it re-released in any kind of form, given that it's been buried and sort of subsumed by Star Fox 64, which was kind of a remake in some respects anyway. I would love to see that on 3DS in 3D, cleaned up, frame rate, all that, frame rate smooth, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just to kind of see, you know, I always have interest really, like how well it holds up. How enjoyable it is when it's not shackled to the you want to talk about jank, you know, trying to do polygonal graphics on Super Nintendo was kind of superhuman feat at the time. And obviously it's a lot more difficult to kind of, I have gone back and replayed Star Fox, I've spoken about it on the show, it's not impossible, and I'll probably be doing it again on Super Nintendo Mini and stuff, but I want to see how the design kind of could hold up to scrutiny when it's not bogged down by some of these problems. I'm still, like imagining keeping a sort of a clean, basic look, flat shaded and stuff, but just, smooth and more playable than it is in its original form and, with an analog controller and things like that. And then the other one would be Wario Land for the Virtual Boy, because that, of course, was 3D, the stereoscopic effect of the Virtual Boy. It's a Wario Land game which, I don't know how many more of them we're ever going to get. It's been a while and stuff. He's getting on for, was it 9 years since Shake It? And, this is one that, has not been re-released like the Game Boy ones were on the VC. And all. I'd like to see that get, it could have color graphics as well as retaining the 3D effect and stuff like that. I'd like to see that kind of both enhanced and preserved, given that it is, part of a series which is, very good and well-liked by a number of people.
Those are good picks.
I mean, my fantasy is Super Tecmo Bowl with the NFL players in it. I know that there was a remake for DS of Tecmo Bowl.
Which you played.
Yeah, it wasn't really great.
No, there seems to be a trend of like, hey, we're gonna the RBI baseball had the same problem. Like, it's not made by the original people. It's it's made just to cash in on the name, and it loses the feel.
Yeah, Super Tecmo Bowl. It's also unique. It would be hard to really replicate the feel of it because it was kind of designed based on ignorance.
Right.
Like,
It was built in Japan.
Yeah, it was built in Japan, and the charm of the game is the fact that the player ratings are so out of whack, and the players are almost like superheroes, some of them, and alternatively, some of them are completely terrible. But
the game doesn't work as a football game, but it works. Yeah, it works as a Tecmo Super Bowl game.
Yeah, it's great because it's kind of fundamentally broken in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the only other one I could think of, and this one's a much bigger stretch, is there's a whole bunch of these Satellaview games that Nintendo Network Software Development made. And a lot of them are basically old games that where they've basically went and made a new quest in the engine and then broadcast.
There's an F-Zero sequel, wasn't there?
There is. There's an F-Zero called Grand Prix 1 and 2. Those two Marvelous game, that Marvelous game that
Eiji Aonuma.
Yeah, that he made. It had two semi-sequel-y things. There's a Wario game. There's two Zelda games. One of them doesn't even star Zelda characters. It stars like a brother and sister. That it's just basically set on the Zelda environment. And then there's one other one I'm blanking on. An Excitebike Mario Combat game, I think? Something like that?
God.
I know its name is Bun Bun Mario Battle Stadium, but I can't remember what it's about. You can guess why I remember its name, because it's Bun Bun Mario Battle Stadium.
Yeah.
But like all those games are dead. The only way people have them is some people preserved the broadcast, which is exactly, this was a literal broadcast.
Yeah, a satellite broadcast, yeah.
And have just sort of slowly recompiled the ROMs of these games. But I mean, if you're telling me that Nintendo put out, even without doing anything other than putting it in English, hey, here's two more games built on, the Link to the Past engine. Oh, and they're weird as shit. Have fun. I'd be all over that in a heartbeat. Like, it would, like, okay, yeah, I'll take two incredibly bizarre games based on this gameplay engine that's amazing. Let's go. But yeah, that those will never happen because Nintendo seems to not even acknowledge those games exist, which is sad. And I think the Wario game was really just Wario Woods, so it doesn't, that one, whatever, we can live without that one. All right, next email, John.
Derek from Toronto. Hello, gentlemen. We often criticize Nintendo by saying that they should learn from Sony and Microsoft, particularly in the online space. My question for you is, what should Sony or Microsoft learn from Nintendo? How to deliver their content to the consumers, like with Nintendo Directs? How to develop a wide genre of games and not rely on typical first- and third-person shooters/action adventures to focus on performance rather than high fidelity graphics, or maybe even how to make games fun? Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Great work.
So,
sorry, my bad.
So, John, I'm going to run this one past you because I think of the group. No. This is legitimate. Of the group, I feel like you're most kind of like in tune with, especially Microsoft, like mm-hmm. their branding and their marketing.
You
and
actually drove the car, didn't you, to the convention center?
That's right. John drove it. In fact, he had to wear a blindfold because he couldn't see it outside the convention hall. Because it's exclusively visible here. Everywhere else, the car becomes invisible as soon as it leaves the stage. This is such a dumb.
It's just terrible. It was my hand behind the stage that actually pulled the cover off of the
car. Oh, okay.
I was 100% me.
It's just dumb. So, like, it's like we'll make fun of this for a while because it was in E3 that was kind of limited for stupid things. That was the king of the dumb.
And also for me, you know, obviously Derek's already touched on it there, but that would be one of my, not so much Nintendo Directs in general, but E3. This is just my feeling on it. You know, I'm not very in tune with the other platform holders at all, even though I had a PS3 and I have an Xbox One now, but. The press conference, it just feels dated. It's risible, to say the least.
So Sony got close. Sony, and I heard somebody describe it as somebody went out and hit play on a YouTube playlist and then walked off the stage. Mm. They had the Cirque du Soleil thing for a minute there. Besides that, it was really just
It just
like
kind of feels like today everything's so kind of competing for attention or whatever. Just the flab in these presentations is just... Why is it allowed? You know, why do they think that this is going to hold people's attention? I mean, I kind of feel like, and again, like I said, I'm just totally guessing because I'm not very in tune with these scenes, but as much as anything, obviously it's kind of vestigial, but I think it's a status thing, you know, of like, oh, well, you know,
there's definitely some of that.
We're the big boys, you know, we have this big conference and we get unnecessary things like a car or Cirque du Soleil, and you know, like it's just waving their status around.
We brought a snake charmer. Why?
In terms of like delivering a message and generating buzz and all that, they'd be better off doing what Nintendo's doing. Get dense. Yeah, not that what Nintendo's doing is perfect or you know anything like that. You know, I wouldn't recommend like some changes or whatever, but certainly there would have to be changes in order to sort of modulate it to what the Microsoft and Sony are trying to achieve, which is always going to be different from what Nintendo are trying to achieve. But in the general principle of like, yeah, let's condense the shit out of this and just have it pre-recorded and stuff. I don't see why that isn't better. I don't see why that. I'm really struggling to see the merits of the stage show on its own, you know, back at this point.
I mean, for me, it's the focus. I would like to see Microsoft and Sony focus more on not necessarily a younger crowd, but I think that they've kind of missed the boat on that. I feel like they've swung so far the other way where, like, you know, everything that Microsoft puts out is, like, either, Forza is their most general audience game, right? It's all Crackdown or Gears
Horizons
of War.
Especially, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like stuff like that. And meanwhile, you have Sony is like, well, hey, here's The Last of Us, and here's God of War, and here's Horizon Zero Dawn.
T.
What?
Those are the ratings.
Right, like, exactly. I mean... I feel like they've just completely abandoned. And then, you know what? What I thought was interesting from Sony was when they released when they talked about releasing the Crash Bandicoot trilogy. I thought that was the biggest joke ever. I was just like, "What a stupid idea!" But man, that thing is selling through the roof.
That's because especially here.
Yeah, and that's because
I occasionally make the joke Europe was a mistake, but I think now I can prove it.
It is massive here specifically. I'm not so sure about other European countries myself. I see the UK charts. Crash is some sort of, you know, massive seller. But it goes to show, you know, the nostalgia that exists here for those games, you know, that may not exist as powerfully in other places.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's certainly tonally is quite different from other things that Sony might do, but it's still appealing to old people. Let's be fair.
Yeah, there's other games too that they just don't exist on those platforms. Like, just kind of like there's, I mean, there's like whimsical stuff, but not like. There's really nothing like Mario Party or
Sony
kind of stuff. It's just not there.
Sony had that run where like they were trying to make their sort of mascot for all that kind of stuff, like Sackboy. But Sackboy's not visually appealing. Mm-hmm. He's a literal burlap sack. Like you literally, he is made out of the material that you would use to deride someone's clothing for not being appealing.
Yeah, and I mean, not to mention terrible jump physics.
I thought he was a cute aesthetic and a cute character, but I don't think it really works for kids.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things that's kind of like weirdly cute for older people. I don't know.
Right.
I appreciate
it. There's a certain irony in its cuteness.
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel like Sony is trying to do that with Knack, but they're just
Knack's not a good game. Like that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like so this actually does get to kind of what I was setting myself up to ask John what your opinion on this theory was. Like to me, one of the things I would like to see them do is really focus on like, this is a gameplay idea we wanted to have, and we've built a game around it.
Oh, rather than the story kind of component and things like that.
Splatoon is a great example, and ARMS is an example of like, this is a mechanic that we played with, we liked it, and so then we went and built a game world around it.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of experimental games coming out of either one of them right now.
Well, I guess the other thing is that if you're in this space where it's all about, you know, huge budgets and, you know, like being really kind
of
impressive and all that kind of stuff, it just seems like whenever, I'm sure this exists in the film industry and things like that too, where if you're going to have to spend so much money on something to make it happen, it does not lend itself to kind of experimentation. It lends itself to, okay, we've crunched the numbers. This is the sort of thing that can succeed. So here's, that's the kind of thing that we're going to give however many millions it takes to actually make it.
I mean, Sony does that definitely more than Microsoft.
Definitely. Yeah, Microsoft doesn't really seem to be that interested in creating new brands right now.
No, not at the moment. Aside from something like maybe Sea of Thieves, which is... You have to commend them on that because that's actually maybe that's a turning point. Like maybe using Rare actually as Rare instead of just like a
But that game's been B-level developers. Forever.
But it could be pretty good.
It does, and that's the other thing that so just a real quick aside before I finish this thought. So Greg, there is actually a concept of the movie. I can't remember if it's 3 is the number, but your movie costs $3 million, $30 million, or $300 million, and nothing in between.
it's like the DSi pricing.
Yeah, exactly. Like I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but like the idea is that it's either like a tiny indie film where most of the money is just the cost of like distribution and stuff. Yeah. It's like that really small film where like you have one actor who takes a producer role and ends up eating 10% or 15% of the budget, and everybody else is just kind of there. Or it's a fucking Transformers movie.
Yeah, it's absolutely ginormous. And at that point, you know, it's...
Right.
At that point, the
question is, can we release this in China? And if we can,
Do we have to make a second version that will actually appeal to China?
Do we have to cut all the ghost references out? Like, it's that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there's been, some kind of, feeling, the games industry is kind of having trouble supplying mid-tier kind of games at the moment, like it's either a tiny little indie game or it's a giant thing. And I guess Nintendo is a kind of good area for that, because it's offering a platform where it's not, the most popular games and the most heavily marketed games are not predicated on being, ridiculously flashy or expensive. But we'll have to see how successful it can be, because the Switch is off to a good start and all that. But as we've said many times, sometimes even if a system is really popular, third parties don't necessarily have a lot of success, because it's the chicken and the egg problem.
That's something I hadn't really considered, because you had all of those kind of mid-tier games, all those devs just got decimated. They just got cleared out, right?
Like
maybe Nintendo fills that niche now.
So the thing is, a lot of them, like, you can trace it back to a game that blew them up, because you... Mm-hmm.
It was like we were talking about with Haze earlier on, if you overextended yourself on something, it didn't do what it needed to do.
THQ is the go-to example because of that Udraw tablet.
Yeah, and
where they went, they made like 46 million of the damn things for 360 and PS. It was a modest success on Wii. They went and made way too many for the PS3 and 360, and it fucking torched them.
Yeah, and like I just think of like Bizarre Creations, who used to make like all the racing games. They made that one racing game, and it just did not do well.
And
just took them
like,
under.
It tells you what the margins were on those mid-level games. They couldn't survive a failure.
Yeah.
You know, if EA has a failure, if EA has a categorical Mass Effect Andromeda, like if they have that game, that hurts.
Yeah.
And like EA will fire BioWare people as a result of that game.
Yep,
they just
that's
will.
The thing. But now Nintendo has enough money to just weather that storm and just move on to the next project, right? So,
but,
so
yeah.
like I look at something like Splatoon 2, and that's the kind of thing that maybe, you know, 10 years ago, you would see that as like a mid-tier first-person shooter. Not saying it's a bad game at all, not talking about the quality of the game, but in terms of like, you know,
a B game.
Yeah, like you have
a
your
great B game.
Yeah, like you have your like massive kind of Advanced Warfare or Infinite Warfare sort of mega projects that cost a ton of money and a ton of marketing and all that kind of stuff. Whereas and Nintendo is sort of like off in its corner, kind of making it sort of, you know.
And I think
I guess
said
the interesting point would be, you know, the difference that with Nintendo is when they will give a pretty big marketing push to games.
That was where I was about to go.
They will give it a marketing push, even though obviously, you know, nothing they make is like the biggest budget thing that's ever been made before or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, you know, what could the other
like
platform holders do with their marketing clout? For not like little indie games that they plucked out of obscurity, but you know, the kind of more mid tier games. But I guess the question, they have to exist first. There's a kind of chicken and the egg problem there. I feel like
Nintendo talked more about ARMS, and they talked about it as an extension of the game's branding, which is important because it helps establish sort of like it's a new franchise, so it doesn't have a brand in people's minds yet. But they've sort of packaged all of its conversation in the game's clothing, like, so they establish the brand in your mind before the game's even out. They've talked more about ARMS at what, no E3s? I don't think it showed up at any E3s ever. It didn't.
Well,
no,
they had the tournament, obviously, but the game was essentially,
effectively out.
It was literally actually was on the Friday, but the reviews were in and all that.
Sea of Thieves has been at what, two E3s at this point? And at least one Gamescom, and like I don't feel like they've talked about it at all as effectively as Nintendo's talked about it.
Well, that gets back to the point that is in the email about the directs, and you know, not just the E3s, but whether that doing that more regularly and kind of more in depth is a good tool for getting these games
but
some kind of recognition in people's minds,
thing,
even if they're not huge.
It's not just a matter of having the directs. It's not just a matter of like showing off the game on a regular basis or having, you know, a pirate band at every fucking games convention you could possibly have them in to do sea chanties about your upcoming pirate online multiplayer game. It's about having messaging that is engaging to your audience and sort of encapsulates what your brand is. And you could argue that's kind of what Microsoft's branding right now is. It sort of encapsulates what they are, but it doesn't have any kind of energy to it. Like, there were some games at their press conference that I thought looked really interesting, but the conference itself didn't have energy.
And the still, Xbox One seems kind of like dead in the water somehow. Like, it just it doesn't excite people. The whole platform.
Well, I guess that's what it's kind of understandable to take that from it when, you know, we're talking about Xbox One X and S and, the revisions.
It can't be about this is these are the games, here's the list, here's some numbers. And because the Xbox One X was a big focus of their press conference this year, I think it negatively impacted the overall quality of the event. Like the system itself is exciting, but like
it forces you to keep looping back to it, and it's like and this will be in HDR.
Almost would have been, and I know why they didn't do this for publicity's sake, and also because the schedule is crazier now. But like when they had to handle Kinect, 7 years ago, they just said, "All right, we're gonna handle Kinect. We're gonna talk about what the fuck Kinect is, and you'll understand. And then when the show comes out, we could just talk about the Kinect games."
Yeah, like a separate Xbox One X event, and then
right. If they had blown, I mean, because it wasn't like it was a secret. Like they could have blown the lid off of it 5 months ago.
Yep.
And taking whatever piss the PS3 Pro had like out of the equation right away, but they said no, we'll talk about it all together. But that's all, you know, supplementary to the bigger problem, which is like, how do you make sure that your branding is in itself a thing you want to engage with? Mm-hmm. Like, people get excited for Nintendo Directs, not just because like, oh man, there could be big news now. They get excited because they're entertained. Like, they enjoy consuming marketing. Like, that's a fucked up phrase. They enjoy consuming marketing.
Parents trying to get their kids to enjoy eating their greens or something.
Right. Like, they're looking forward to being advertised to.
Well, I mean, and Nintendo really does know how to kind of exploit that, oh, I love Nintendo, they're so cute and cuddly, kind of that sentiment.
Yeah. But like, they really play obviously to that, you couldn't use the same kind of targets if you wanted to appeal to, you know, if you're Microsoft or Sony. Mm-hmm. But you could certainly find ways to package your marketing in a way that appeals to the people you know or your core audience.
Yeah.
And serve it to them in a way that's entertaining. And, you know, then maybe you do deprioritize your E3 because you're able to communicate and people are excited to see you. It's not like you know that, okay, I've got them for an hour and a half every year. In the beginning of June, I need to blow them out of the door at the beginning of June. And that sort of goes to one other thing I'd like to see them both do. I mentioned it with Sea of Thieves. It's been around for, feels like forever now.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason Sony's kind of thudded this time was how much stuff that was already announced.
Yeah, talking about stuff too far in advance, you get burned all the time.
Having a fucking Kickstarter announced at your E3 press conference. Like, that's...
I know, not to mention when they were, like, sitting on top of the world. It's not like with like the Nintendo desperation where it's like, Fire Emblem Crossover with Shin Megami Tensei at some point in the indefinite future. Like, they were already fucking bathing in the blood of their corpses and their rivals.
The Shenmue announcement is worse than the car, but the optics aren't as silly, so it'll never be as funny. But like, to have Yu Suzuki come out and say, we're going to do a Kickstarter on a stage that probably cost $20 million to put together.
Oh, I mean, never
mind.
To
come out and beg for money. It's like, the fuck is all of this?
Well, I mean, never mind the remake of Final Fantasy VII. I mean,
oh my God.
This will be out at some point in the next 20 years. Oh my God, that's amazing! It's like, no, that's stupid. It's like, that's what I actually like from Nintendo. I know that Nintendo isn't going to, like, you know...
I mean,
they're not
going to
do that. They're going to say, okay, this is probably coming out in the next six months.
Zelda was
at
a million
E3s,
it felt like. But you know, we've joked. Like, was it Skyward Sword was the one where I just said at the beginning, it's going to get delayed again because it's only been at two E3s.
Yeah.
And then
Zelda is those particular kind of Zelda, you know, something like Link Between Worlds could just bring out of the ground and it's going, you know, at a direct. Like,
it's out tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, but the big ones, yeah.
Attune your expectations accordingly. But what did they talk about? They talked about Mario, which we only knew about since January, officially. We had seen that like half second clip or whatever. But they talked about a few games that are coming in 2018, which is just some time off, but they could still be all before E3 next year.
Yeah, I think it's better. You're talking Kirby, Yoshi. I would kind of expect them to be around there.
And we talked about Metroid, which is your one example of like, why are you talking about this now? But we know they talked about it then because they had to.
The logo thing.
They had to do it because of Metroid 2, which they were announcing at the end of the show.
But that's okay though, because you know, I think that one of the reasons why the Sony and Microsoft communities are probably a bit more toxic is because they throw that blood into the water. You know what I'm saying? So people just have years and years to get pissed off over stuff. With Nintendo, because they don't announce games so far out ahead of time, people don't necessarily have that kind of, you know, they don't have anything to really get pissed off about because they don't know about things.
Xenoblade 2's this year. Like,
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's actually got Nomura Designs in it. We know now.
It's got and Nomura Design in it, which probably meant it took a year off with the Square Enix projects.
A game with Nomura Designs will actually release a few months after its original announcement, or whatever. Within a year, anyway.
It's kind of like there's the sense that okay, this game is real when it's announced. Like that's
yeah. Exactly.
That's the difference. And there's something about that that is kind of comforting. Now, of course, we mentioned, like, with the Wii U, there were all kinds. Like, the Xenoblade X announcement for Wii U, all of that first trailer happens in, like, the first 7 minutes of the game. Of the, like, 100-hour game, it's all in that first 7 minutes. It's that first trailer of you walking into New L.A. Mm-hmm. It's even using the music from that. They've just kind of rematched it to some animation scenes, presumably because they weren't sure what order to put them in the final cut. But like that's the trailer. So to some degree, yeah, like Nintendo does it too. And so it'd be remiss of us to say, like, well, Nintendo never does this. But
no, I do
think that the directs,
exception.
Yeah,
the directs, yeah, it is the exception. But also, I think the directs have kind of helped, you know, like you said, because it's taken some of the kind of singular importance away from E3. It's less pressure to like to put these like big announcements, like cluster them all into this one show. And if you're going to do that, you're inevitably going to have things which are farther off, and then right. There's more scope for them to go awry or get delayed or whatever. You know, like the more granular approach you kind of take. You know, I feel like you're less likely to run into some of those problems. So, again, I think, you know, I'm not saying that necessarily Microsoft would be well served by, you know, going for a one-for-one kind of copying of this of Nintendo's approach.
No, it needs to fit their audience.
Yeah, exactly. The significant sort of adapting, you know, the adaptation needed to get that done. But is there something for them to learn? Absolutely. I can't imagine there isn't.
Just less techno supremacy talk, like just in general. You can have, and you could say like this is the most powerful system in the world. Great, end the sentence. Well, because 97% of your audience doesn't know what a gigaflop is.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, but for Microsoft at least, because they're PC.
Yeah, I guess, but like that core PC group, they're still not going to buy a PC console. They're going to go make their own PC. Like so, you know. There's a trade-off in there somewhere where like you can dial that down a bit.
Thing is, like, what is the advantage of getting a PC that can't have Steam on it? Like, I don't know.
If you're Microsoft, the advantage you get to buy the game.
Well, yeah, the advantage for Microsoft, of course. But yeah, like while we're in the topic of hardware, like my answer to the question is. It's kind of weird because it already happened. Sony already took a cue from Nintendo. But I remember when I was a Wii and PS3 owner, just really enjoying how snappy the UI on the Wii was and how quickly you could get into a game. And it was exactly the opposite with the PlayStation 3. It just seemed clunky. Everything took forever to load. And the menus weren't very good.
XMB is a mess, especially early XMB.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was not a good experience. And then Nintendo forgot all that it did right with the Wii U. And now Nintendo had the clunky kind of UI that you have to wait forever for it to load and then to get to a game and everything. And Sony with the PlayStation 4 had like the snappy UI that like you can pause a game, like come back to it instantly. Just a great user experience. And I'm glad that Nintendo figured it out with the Switch. Like now we're back to having kind of a good snappy UI and just I hope that won't go away as more features are added to it. But
let me introduce you to the Xbox One S all-in-one home media console. I believe that's the full name. Whew, that interface. But yeah, responsiveness is super ideal because I'm not here to see your menu. I'm here to play your game.
And yeah. usually that's something Nintendo super sensitive about, is loading and all that kind of, you know, the sort of transparency and not having to, like, explain stuff in a big wall of text or, you know, menus and all that. They like to try and make it as lean as possible. But, yeah, so they kind of, they've had varying results with some of their stuff. But Switch is very, yeah, it's difficult to say whether it's, like, minimalist because that's, you know, something they wanted to correct, or whether it's just because it's a very kind of bare-bones situation at the moment. So, yeah.
This is all that's here.
I do hope it doesn't get convoluted, but it could use with some music, though. I like music on Nintendo's menus.
Music would be nice.
Because I've said it before, like, Sony and Microsoft stores seem really dead, you know, by comparison, and now the Switch's store is dead, too.
Yeah, I've seen someone on Twitter saying, like, oh, well, they might not want the music to take up, like, bandwidth, and to that I say, just install it on my Switch. Like, just send me the music and just start playing it when I browse like the eShop. Or let me listen to it whenever. I'm fine.
The loop's not that long.
Another cue, I guess, that Sony, I wish, would pick up from Nintendo is to actually use the motion controls on their motion controller.
I forgot that it has motion controls.
Yeah, I just it's very disappointing because it does help me in Splatoon. I like using the motion controls to just, you know, make minute adjustments to my aiming. Or it works so strangely well when you're you bring up the map and you're just using like the motion control pointer to point at a teammate and jump to them. So like, you know, use that. Sony, like, you've got one, and it, I don't know. It would help, I think. I'm too small of an audience, like, but, like, I think it would help, like, with people like me who kind of struggle with just dual analog and would rather have something more precise, like a mouse or, you know, some kind of, like, motion control crutch.
No, I think that's. I think from a more broader standpoint, put your sticks in the right place, Sony. Jesus Christ, it's 2017.
Yes. Yes.
The D-pad is not the primary method of moving your character around. God damn it. It's 2017. You've been using the same controller for 20 fucking years. It's time to move on. Anyway, I got that on my system. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for listener mail this week. We took kind of our time on these, but that's okay. We've got plenty of mail we could pick up next time. But do not use that as an excuse to refrain from sending us your questions, comments, concerns, criticisms. I've run out of C words.
Concern for James. General, I mean, send your heartfelt.
Use a question, but it's got the same sound.
Yeah, heartfelt.
Condolences. Send me my condolences for having to deal with John. to our inbox, it's RFN at attenderworldreport.com. I don't know why I had to think about that for a second. I thought I missed
really
a letter.
This really surprised me, James.
I thought I missed a letter, okay?
Yep. I mean, there's about a big four of things that you could screw up at any particular episode.
But so the thing is, like, I've said it so many times now, it just like, it's not like an individual letter. It's like one word at this point.
I really just, I think for me, it would, what would really top it off is if you forgot the name of the podcast.
Oh,
that
yeah,
would be
like,
sweet.
No one's ever done that. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
It would make the whole cycle complete for me.
It's just lonely. He just wants someone else in the club.
What if I just start the show end the show by starting it? I just announce the start of the episode at the very end and just screw everything up. But that's not what we're going to do because it's time to end the episode. Reminder. Our next retroactive is coming up in the middle of August. It is Super Mario Sunshine for all your summertime fun and pachinko.
Clean is better than dirty. Stop playing Splatoon and start cleaning up the place.
I think we're finally going to put that to the test, aren't we?
You can post your thoughts about the game.
That's
going to
be a Splatfest idea, hasn't it? Clean and dirty.
In the NintendoWorld.com forums. Why try to talk over these guys so we can end the show? Greg, what's our music for this week?
Well, we have a request this week from Aero, who were coinciding with the launch of the Lady Layton game on mobile globally and in Japan on 3DS. I think the final title was Layton Mystery Journey, Catriel and the Millionaire's Conspiracy.
That sounds like one of those stupid murder mystery games that was coming out on DS every other week.
I might be misremembering.
No, that's exactly. You're spot on. That is the name of the game.
It's a lot of stuff in that.
It sounds
title.
Like, what was it, the Millionaire Murderers Club games?
The hidden object game thing. But
it sounds like one of those.
We will be getting it in October in terms of 3DS, the localized version, I believe. But to coincide with that, Aero has suggested the theme from Professor Layton and the Unwound Future.
So good.
Also known as the Lost Future here and other places. I don't know why. I much prefer Unwound myself.
This is thoughts about the song. This is probably the last of the opening themes that really goes for that French bar music. Before it got a little bit more jazzy in the subsequent. There's definitely jazz in this song. And two, this is of all the Layton games, the one where I dropped the system and said no at the end twist because it's too stupid.
Oh, it's magnificent. This is the favorite of the four Layton games that I've played.
This one, and then when they let the writer of Ace Attorney write one, are by far the dumbest. Because he said, oh no, you haven't thought of this stupid idea before. Oh, this is magnificent.
Yeah, a great soundtrack. All the Layton games are great soundtrack, but this is really good. A great choice from Aero. And I look forward to showcasing further requests in subsequent episodes.
Excellent. Well, that's going to do it for the show this week. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.